Well, it's the start of the third week of the 2019 Utah legislative session. Joining me by phone with an update is KPCW reporter Emily Means. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start off with Senator Alan Christensen. Again, he represents a portion of North Summit County. It's Senate Bill 96, the Medicaid Amendments Bill, passed through the full House on Friday. Firstly, is this a lot like the Prop 2 replacement bill in which lawmakers basically replace the bill rather than just amending it, or were these just fine-tuning amendments here?
Well, it's certainly not what voters voted on when they voted for Prop 3. Christensen's bill, as it is filed, is called Medicaid Expansion Adjustment. So, you know, whatever that means to him, but it is not the full Medicaid expansion as outlined by Prop 3. It's definitely a more limited version. I guess you could call it the replacement bill.
Okay. Well, tell us about the vote then, Senate Bill 96.
Sure. So this bill moved really quickly through both chambers of the legislature, and on Friday it passed with a 56-19 vote. Mostly along party lines, but a handful of Republicans joined Democrats in voting against it. And I think one of the important things about the vote that happened on Friday is that it passed by a two-thirds majority. So that means if Governor Gary Herbert signs the bill, it'll take effect immediately, and voters can't put up a referendum against it. So this is kind of the final word on Medicaid expansion, unless someone wants to run a ballot initiative again in the next year or so, but that takes a lot of work. So one of the interesting notes about this bill as it was substituted by the House is that there is a fallback plan. So there's the limited expansion that's outlined in SB 96, which covers up to 100% of the federal poverty level, and that's the difference, right, between Prop 3 and this. That requires waivers to be approved by the federal government. So because it's different from Medicaid as outlined in the Affordable Care Act, the federal government needs to approve this program that Utah has in place. So they've kind of set a deadline for themselves. If it's not approved, if the waivers aren't approved by January 2020, a year from now, a little less than a year from now, then we will fall back to Medicaid expansion as it's outlined in Prop 3, more or less. There was actually a bill sponsored by Representative Ray Ward, who is a Republican. He's also a physician, and he's been a big proponent of Medicaid expansion. But his HB 210 was basically Prop 3, but with those tweaks. So, you know, you asked if this was a replacement bill or if they just made some technical tweaks. Well, HB 210 was those technical tweaks. So, that's the fallback plan. And if we don't get those waivers from the federal government by January 2020, that'll be the case. But, Senate leadership is really confident that the Trump administration will approve the waivers for matching the funding rate 90% to 10%. So the state would pay 10% at some point. So we're not entirely sure when. So I don't know if this isn't the last that we'll hear about Medicaid expansion in Utah. It actually needs to go back to the Senate because the House made that substitution. So they're planning on voting on that today during Senate floor time. And then if and when it passes, it'll go to Governor Gary Herbert's desk to be approved or vetoed.
Okay. But you say he's leaning towards it.
Yep. Looks like it. It seemed like kind of at the beginning he was interested in exploring Prop 3 and seeing what happens when we expand Medicaid fully, kind of, seeing where the funding puts us. But he released a statement last week when the House passed it, I believe, saying that, this is a good bill and it supports not only Utah's willingness to be compassionate towards others, but also Utah's frugality. So we will likely see Governor Herbert pass this bill.
All right. So if approved, talk a little bit about how this could impact us here locally. I know that you were there at the Park City Council retreat hearing from Summit County Mental Health Coordinator Aaron Newman.
Right. And this is kind of what he opened with, mostly because this bill has dominated the legislative session thus far. So Aaron Newman presented at the retreat, and he said that if it passes, if SB 96 passes, then the county could anticipate a 10% cut to mental health and substance abuse funding. So, you know, not only is Medicaid there to provide insurance for low-income people, but it also provides funding to a lot of different health programs. So that was a concern of his. And, you know, I'll try to follow up with him this week, too, and see where he's at. I guess we'll just wait until the Senate decides on this new substitute. So, it will have an impact in the community, and I guess we'll need to see what other programs Medicaid funding goes towards and how those will be impacted.
Yeah. So, if we wanted to keep the budget the same, the money would have to be made up locally then.
Yeah. It would.
Yeah. You also, Aaron Newman, you said, also updated the council on some other legislation that the health department's keeping tabs on. What other bills is he watching?
Sure. So he had concerns with a bill called HB 226. And this is Representative Norm Thurston's bill, I believe. He's a Republican from Provo. And this bill would eliminate educational requirements for becoming a mental health clinician, but not just for mental health services. It's kind of like a general licensing amendment. So basically, instead of going through school and, you know, if you have a social worker, you have a master's in social work, which is a lot of schooling, you could take a test and become a licensed clinician. And it kind of reminds me of a bill that passed in the legislature maybe like 2 years ago now, that did the same thing for teachers, basically. So instead of going to university and, you know, doing their teaching program, you could take this exam, and basically if you pass the exam, you become a teacher. So I think it's meant to address a shortage of clinicians. That wasn't outlined in the bill, but that was kind of the sense with the teacher licensing bill from a couple years ago. But, you know, Aaron Newman's concern is that you'll have people taking tests to become clinicians, and, you know, they won't have the experience that someone might have had they gone through a university education. So this bill will actually be heard today in the House Business and Labor Committee. I'm not sure if Aaron will be testifying at this hearing, but I'll give it a listen and see if he's there, see if Summit County has a presence.
Okay. Last week you mentioned a bill that might interest beer drinkers and those opposed to drinking beer. A proposal to raise the low alcohol limits for beer sold at grocery stores has cleared its first hurdle. What's this about?
Right. So I think anyone who's tried to buy beer in the grocery store has noticed that they can only buy beer that's 3.2% alcohol by weight. So Senate Bill 132 is sponsored by Senator Jerry Stevenson. He's a Republican from Layton, and he's usually the point guy on alcohol legislation for the Utah legislature. But basically, this would change the metric from 3.2% alcohol content to 4.8%. So, you know, it raises the threshold just a little bit, but Stevenson didn't really view this necessarily as an alcohol bill, but more as a commerce bill. And that's because, you know, big distributors nationwide are phasing out the 3.2% beer because no one else really seems to drink it except for Utah. So we make up a very small portion of that market. And so at this committee hearing where this passed, and I believe it passed unanimously, You know, you had your opponents to the bill, and that included conservative think tanks, the Sutherland Institute, and the Utah Eagle Forum, and they argued that making Higher Point beer more easily available would lead to more underage drinking. And then you also had the proponents of the bill, which include retailers and local breweries, saying that it would kind of bring Utah, you know, into the present and in line with the rest of the nation. Although some breweries thought that the 4.8% was not a number that actually mattered and kind of limited local breweries' ability to make their product available. So that passed out of the committee last Thursday and will be heard on the Senate floor next.
Okay. What else is happening this week?
Sure. So one thing I thought was really interesting from the Park City Council retreat, Sustainability Manager Luke Carton said that he's been working on a bill. The city's been working on a bill with Summit County, Salt Lake City, Rocky Mountain Power, and the state energy regulators to help communities across the state become 100% renewable energy by 2030. And of course, that's Park City's goal. I asked him if this was a bill or a resolution, because, you know, a resolution is more like a statement, you know, that we want this to happen. This is a goal we're working towards. And he said it's a real bill, and I have no other information about it because it hasn't been numbered yet. It's a hidden bill currently. But he seemed really confident that it would pass because Democrats should like the overall effects on environmental quality. Republicans will probably like the job creation aspect of it. And he wouldn't tell me who the sponsor is, but he thought it was likely to be carried by a Republican. So hopefully that comes out this week, and then we'll report on it and see what's in that bill.
Okay. Finally, wanted to ask you, any word on that electric bike bill? I don't even know that it had been numbered or any of that, but there was...
So I took a look to see if there was anything related to electric bikes, and I haven't seen anything. I saw a bill relating to electric scooters and DUIs, which is not what we're looking for, but, you know, it might be something worth mentioning once Park City gets electric scooters. So I haven't seen that electric bike on trail bill, and I'm not sure if it will come up. But a lot of bills do pop up in the last, you know, week or so of the session. So it could surprise us.
Okay. That's KPCW reporter Emily Means. Thanks for your time, Emily.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW Transportation Planning Manager Caroline Rodriguez. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning.
She mentioned electric scooters. Where are we with that temporary zoning ordinance, looking at that issue?
Yep. So from the Summit County side, we are preparing to formally codify that ordinance with a few changes and updates just to make it fit in to where we are in the basin. I think Park City Municipal is still trying to decide where they're going with that. And I know as part of that, we're going to do a joint survey effort to see what our citizens are thinking about that.
Yeah. I mean, do you expect to see them this spring sometime?
You know, we're still not really sure. At first, we were pretty nervous that they would make it up here, especially during Sundance, but I don't think they made any appearance. And so, you know, only time will tell. We just want to be prepared in case they do come in without advance notice.
Okay. Another letter to the editor this weekend about the bus lines. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us where, because I know that you're meeting with Park City Transit. I mean, what kind of discussion is happening there at the staff level?
So at the staff level, I mean, of course, we're always looking at ridership and ride times and performance. But in a bigger sense, we're really working on how do we analyze routes? How do we analyze them individually and, you know, as part of a holistic system? And we're really trying to hone in on our methodology for doing that. And I think in 2019, one of our big goals is to not only determine that methodology, but to talk about it with the public so they understand this is how we're looking at routes, this is what we're looking at, and this is how we're measuring them, and talk about that. And then so moving forward, our public will really understand that it's not just about how many people step up onto a bus or maybe how long it takes from one particular destination to another destination. It's bigger than that.
Well, it is all about how long it takes to get from point A to point B. I mean, that's why people will or will not ride the bus, is my guess.
Yeah, I do see that from the sense of my trip and an individual's trip. It is how long it takes. But if somebody's trip is 10 minutes longer than it would be in a car, is that an appropriate trade-off? And that's what I mean by how long it takes.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, before we go back to the kind of the goals for the
sure.
coming year, how things worked in your estimation during Sundance and the World Championships. We've had a lot of people in town the last 3 weeks.
I thought things worked extremely well. Given that we had thousands and thousands of extra people, the system functioned very well. We saw a lot of people using the park and ride at Ecker, at Richardson Flat. We were constantly monitoring all of those park and rides, all of the people getting on and off the bus. And given the crowds we had, I think it worked extremely well.
Yeah. Do you have numbers for the Ecker Hill park and ride?
I have initial numbers just for Ecker, not for the system as a whole, because I think, you know, with the Sundance, with added shuttles, they're still trying to work that out. But we saw approximately 3,800 boardings at Ecker Hill for the 10 days of Sundance.
And that compares to 380?
I mean, yeah, much less. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we have no idea where those people were coming from, whether they were the Salt Lake commuters, whether
right.
they were the
right.
Centerville Basin.
Mm-hmm. We don't know how they were, you know, where their origin was, but we do know they were using it, and that's the most important thing. You know, moving forward, we're going to try and understand more where they're coming from to get to the Ecker Park and Ride lot.
Okay. If people do have feedback, I mean, what's the best way to get that to you?
Mm-hmm. So there's a few ways. You can either email me directly, Caroline, or you can email Alfred at Park City Municipal. Almost all the feedback that comes in regarding the transit center, the transit system, we talk about as a staff group between the city and county. Anyone can come to a JTAB, that's the Joint Transit Advisory Board meeting. Or you could email the council, or obviously we read all of the letters to the editor. So any of those methods, we get the feedback.
Yeah.
And we welcome it and appreciate it.
Yeah. How can we improve the experience, though, when we have these large crowds? And the perfect example there would have been a week ago Saturday when people were trying to get to the base of Canyons Village for the, mm-hmm. the opening ceremony. I mean, we had a report on social media. You know, but basically they got off the bus to walk because it was faster at that point. I mean,
yeah,
it's great when people are taking the bus, but if the bus isn't moving anywhere, I mean, it's like may as well just driven.
Yeah, yeah, I totally appreciate the frustration. I think it's important to keep in mind that even a system that works 99% of the time is not going to work when you have an 800% growth in the number of people using the system for 3 hours out of the year. I mean, I totally understand the frustration, and I appreciate that people tried to use the bus, but just with the crowds we had, we can't plan a year-round system for potentially, you know, 5 hours out of the year that are going to be clogged. And part of that, I think I heard Nan Worrell talking at the Park City Retreat about personal responsibility. And what is that trade-off, or what are you willing to contribute to the system to make it overall more effective? And I think that does mean more people trying the bus. And maybe that means you walk once. Maybe that means you try the bus once. Maybe that means it's a Bluebird day and you ride your bike once. I mean, we do the best we can with the resources that we have.
Certainly, if more people had taken the buses would have been able to get through better.
Yes, because there would have been less single occupancy vehicles on the road.
Yeah. Any suspects or updates with regard to the electric bus charger there at Kimball Junction?
Yeah, I know the Sheriff's Department is working on that. They do have some security footage, and they're trying to determine if they can identify the vehicle that took it out, but I don't know the extent of their investigation so far.
Yeah, so, I mean, what kind of vehicle would be driving through there? shouldn't have been there.
Not a vehicle that should have been there.
Yeah. Okay. Because it the buses fit underneath.
Yes. Okay. Correct. Yep.
All right. All right. Well, it wasn't the case that a bus ran into it.
No, was that it? Was not the case.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Salt Lake City Park City bus. It now drops off at the Kimball Junction Transit Center. It used to come up to the Old Town mm-hmm. Transit Center. And we've got a staff member who does ride that. And what she is finding is that she's at the mercy of the white bus getting her
yes.
to the Kimball Junction Transit Center. And there's been a couple times where she misses it. I mean, if we want people to use that, why not bring that back to the Old Town Transit Center so you know you're on the bus and you know you've got your ride to Salt Lake?
So initially we made the change because it was our understanding and analysis that indicated that there would be a significant enough cost savings that we could add additional midday runs in terminating at the Kimball Junction Transit Center. In addition to that, with the high frequency of the white, you know, people should be able to make the connections. However, what this experience has shown is that a lot of our riders are frustrated because they can't make that connection. And the service is operated by UTA, so they can't hold the Connect bus in Park City. So people are missing and you know, that's not how we want the system to operate. And that is certainly something that is on our radar that we're looking at to see, do we need to make another adjustment? Do we need to add that leg back? How can we make it work for people? I mean, did we make a change that just didn't work? And, you know, you don't want to change back within a month or 2 months. You want to give it some time to see if there's really a strategy that we can employ that will get people to that. But I think when we're looking at services that we're reviewing for performance, that's at the top of our list.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about just the fact that we have no bus to the hospital, the health department, or the soon-to-be Peace House. What are we looking at there, and when will that happen?
So we do have the Dial-A-Ride service that is available, of course. But again, that's one of those service areas that in 2019 is going to require some analysis in terms of just the density of destinations that are out there and how we can best serve our population in getting there. So that's another one of those services that is certainly on the radar, especially, you know, when Peace House opens, that's just another large group of employees and volunteers that we're going to have to serve.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about what else is on your kind of goal sheet for 2019.
Yep. Well, certainly the Jeremy Ranch Interchange project is going to be a large project headed by Derek Radke, and that's a big piece of what's going to happen in 2019. We are adding bike share stations in 2019. Hopefully Punxsutawney Phil was right and we can start construction in April, but people will hear a lot about that with a lot of lead time to be ready for that construction. It very minimal impacts to the traveling public. And then again, as I mentioned, you know, I think 2019 is an opportunity for us as staff to step back and analyze the investments we've made since the 2016 tax initiatives and whether those have been effective, whether there's other ways that we can use the funds more effectively, and how the service changes we've made in the last 3 years are working.
You know, I got a message after we had aired the story about the discussions with folks in Heber Valley. Apparently, we're going to do a mm-hmm. study to look about bringing in perhaps a transit line there. Somebody who lives in Timberline wanted to know, why aren't we looking at serving the 800 households in Summit Park and Timberline before we're kind of even going out of our own county?
Sure. I think what's important to remember is that study, the discussions on that have not been, to my understanding, have not been led by Park City. They haven't been led by Summit County. They've been led on the other side by Mountainland Association of Governments and those Wasatch County entities. So I can't comment on that because I haven't been involved. I can say that we are always looking at how we can serve Timberline, how we can serve the Summit Park area. And we felt that opening the park and ride at Ecker got us one step closer to that service. They're a very difficult operating environment. And, you know, we're always looking to see, is there a way we can serve them? Do we have the resources Can the vehicles get through? Is it efficient? Is it effective? So we haven't forgotten about that neighborhood at all. It's just, you know, you have to look at where you can get the best return on investment for your resources.
Okay, but it's certainly being looked at?
Of course, yes.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention, Caroline?
Nope, just appreciate everybody that did take the opportunity to try the park and ride and the bus, especially during Sundance and FIS. It made a really, really big difference.
All right, Caroline Rodriguez, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, the FIS World Championships flag was handed over to a delegation from China last night on Main Street at the closing ceremony. In the studio with a recap of that 10-day sports fest, I have Tom Webb with US Ski and Snowboard. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Before we start talking a little bit about the results, let's talk about just how things went from your perspective. We had three cancellations due to snow and wind.
Yeah, I mean, the best planned events always have a scope to go slightly wrong. I think one of the things that hit us was once every 15-year storm. I think people were surprised by the amount of snow that came in. But I think in the end, 10 days of very, very good action. You know, obviously it's disappointing when we have to postpone and then cancel events. But I think everybody understands that, you know, when you get these kind of extraordinary occasions like the weather that came in, you have to be able to kind of work around that. And we did. I think, you know, even with those cancellations, I think everybody was extremely happy with how those 10 days went. Hundreds of millions of people tuning in around the world to look at Park City and Solitude. So I think a pretty, pretty good 10 days.
Yeah, so the main decision on that is the safety of the athletes.
Yeah, it's the safety of the athletes. So the cancellation that we had to do yesterday with the snowboard slope style event, that was about safety, but also about fairness. You know, strong gusty winds mean that the riders who were out there on the slopestyle course weren't able to have 100% confidence in the course. But also, if you're putting somebody into competition in gusty winds when they're performing those kind of tricks, you cannot guarantee that you've got a kind of consistent playing field for them. So that was one of the those were the two considerations with that. And with the earlier events that we had to cancel, really it was just about kind of not being able to get ahead of the conditions. There's a multiple people involved in these kind of decisions, not just the resort and the organising committee. We also have to take into account things like the TV audience as well. So it really is the last resort. But yeah, when you've got a mix of the elements and safety in mind, very often you have to make those tough decisions.
Yeah. So I mean, in the Olympics, we kind of build that into the schedule, but there was no room to reschedule here, huh?
No, we just I think the calendar was planned an awfully long time ago, and we have to take into account a number of different things, not just the weather that's coming in, but also the day-to-day operations of the resorts. The resorts have been an incredibly good partner to these World Championships. And, you know, when they're looking at what we're going to be doing on their property, you know, they have enormous amounts of considerations as well. So, I think the Olympics, frankly, has the luxury of a longer time span to be able to take place. We had these 10 days and I think we had to make some allowances with those extraordinary elements that came in.
Okay. Well, I was a big fan of Lupe last night as the closing act. I'm just wondering, though, any complaints that, I mean, given his language a little rough at times, and we had certainly young kids in the audience.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything yet about that. I do want to apologize if anybody did take offense at any of the language that was used. But I think overall it was a really good way to wrap up the whole event. I was there for the closing ceremony before and heard the mayor speak some really, really good words about what it meant from Park City. But also, I think the Chinese delegation was very warmly received. And again, I think it's a kind of sign of just how big the status was of these World Championships that we had this official ceremony handing over a flag. And, you know, there is obviously a ceremonial element to that, but also it shows, I think, just how big this was. You know, we are now handing over to the country that will host the 22 Beijing Olympics. And who knows, maybe there's something in that about the Olympic flag also being important to this city. Who knows, maybe we've put ourselves on the map firmly enough that those making decisions about the future will have something positive to say and think about Park City and Solitude and everybody who was part of these World Championships.
Okay, well, let's kind of hit some of the highlights with the champions. I think Team USA did it? I mean, in terms of the total number of medals?
Yes. Yeah, so U.S. ski and snowboard athletes registered 14 medals in the end, which means that the U.S. won the medals table. There are no trophies for that. But obviously, you know, that's what we aim to do. Within U.S. ski and snowboard, we talk about helping our athletes be best in the world. Well, we were here. There were some standout performances. I think anybody who saw Chloe Kim in the half pipe, one run, first run, that's a gold medal winning run. Chloe is obviously a phenom in the classic sense, but just keeps going from strength to strength. I think the start, Mick Dierdorf winning two medals. He'd never been on a World Cup podium before, but he wins that gold medal in snowboard cross. And then he and Lindsay Jacobellis, after a little bit of a technical issue with the start gate, meant that their gold run was slightly delayed. But that was a really good way for us to be able to kick off. We rounded it off with Chris Corning winning gold yesterday. So even though we did have to cancel that snowboard slope style event, we have been able to run the qualifiers. So Chris, who's having an amazing season, got himself on the podium. And I think anybody that was at Dual Moguls at Deer Valley on Saturday night would have been absolutely entertained in a really, really amazing way to see three US athletes on podiums there, to see the young Japanese athlete Daichi Hara perform one of the most astounding crashes I think anybody's ever seen. If you haven't seen it, try and look up Daichi Hara Dual Moguls run.
This is where he was coming into it so fast that instead of just doing one inverted, he did two. And then, of course, he landed halfway down into the mogul field.
That's exactly right. Well, I'm told, I'm no expert on this, but I'm told that what happened was he hit that second jump so hard and he had so much air that he realized if he tried to land that single, he would have had a really serious problem. So he went for a double. Had he crossed the line, I think that would have been incredibly spectacular. I also think he would have been disqualified because I think you're not allowed to do a double flip on that bottom jump or even on the first one. That was something else. He then went on to win bronze. So if you've seen that crash, it's quite something that the rest of us would probably have a week off. 10 minutes later, he was up and winning bronze medal in that small final. So that was quite something. But also the atmosphere up at Deer Valley was just amazing. Jalen Kauf obviously gets an awful lot of local support. Bradley Wilson, even though he's, you know, not originally born here, he is very much a Park City athlete and has this very close relationship with Deer Valley. So there was a huge amount of love and support for those guys up there. And I think to see Tess Johnson also putting herself into medal contention, that was amazing. There were so many highlights. It's 10 days that has rushed by. Ultimately, US ski and snowboard topped that medal table. So our chief of athletics, Luke Bodensteiner, I'm sure will be happy.
Okay. Plans to bring it back one day?
Well, there was a discussion about that during the closing ceremonies. It's a very long process. It takes years of planning and development, and you have to go and pitch to the International Ski Federation. So I'm not sure that we have any firm plans right now today. But I think, you know, we would love to have world-class sport back here as often as we possibly can. We have the World Cup at Deer Valley every year. We have other snowboard and free ski events here every year. But I think that there will be some folks down in Salt Lake City who will be very keen to use this to further their claims for an Olympic Games. We shall see.
Okay. And of course, while a lot of the talk's been local here with the freestyle freeski snowboard competition, we had the Alpine World Championships happening in Åre, Sweden. Lindsey Vonn, of course, the final race of her impressive career.
Yeah, final race ended in fairy tale fashion. Lindsey Vonn won a bronze in the downhill on Sunday morning. So yeah, while everything has been going on here in Park City, we have US ski team has folks over in Europe keeping an eye on those world championships. And for Lindsey to cap off that career with a bronze medal is just extraordinary. We shouldn't also forget that Michaela Schifrin is a new world champion. She won the Super G. Bryce Bennett and Steve Nyman have been having a very, very strong time over there in Åre as well. But yeah, quite rightly, I think Lindsey has stolen the headlines from Åre with just an extraordinary performance. You know, it was only a couple of weeks ago that she was picking herself back up after an almighty accident and then goes to Åre Now everybody knows just how many injuries she has had and how much pain she is in. So for her to finish off her career with that bronze is extraordinary.
Okay, and more to come there. And then let's talk briefly about the cross-country world championships. Those start, what, next week?
Yeah, so cross-country world championships, Seefeld in Austria. We have a really good momentum going into that. Sadie Bjornsson put herself back on the podium as we got so much strength and depth in that team. So there's a lot of folks going over to Seefeld, I think with a really high hopes for some more medals there. Jesse Diggins in particular has been rather quiet for the last couple of weeks, but I think when Jesse gets herself into action in Seefeld, I think we could see something rather spectacular.
Okay, well, I appreciate you coming in. I know it was a well-deserved day off for you, so thanks for the update.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the support, KPCW. You guys have been great.
That's Tom Webb with U.S. Ski and Snowboard. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. A registration for Park City Preschool opens today in the studio with details about how some of those costs are funded. I have Jennifer Billow, the Associate Director at the Park City Education Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So preschool isn't totally funded by taxpayers, huh?
It's not at all, really. Well, I would say local taxpayers. So we don't get any funding from the state legislature. There's no funding for preschool whatsoever. But studies, 30, 40-year studies, have shown preschool is critical for long-term support and increases high school and college graduation rates, earned income over a lifetime, and a high-quality, affordable preschool really makes a difference in cost for the school district. Studies have shown that for every dollar invested in preschool, you get $13 back in savings, everything from special ed to actually lower prison rates because kids are entering kindergarten ready to learn. They know how to sit in a circle. They know how to hold a pencil. They know their letters and their numbers. So it's critical, and the school district saw this in 2011 and started the first preschool, and we now fund about half the cost of that. So tuition's on a sliding scale. It can be anywhere from free to, if you do pay full, it is still very, very affordable compared to other preschools in town. We're very excited because three of the four elementary schools have a four-year-old full-day class, and that is very popular. So registration opened at the district office at 8 a.m. this morning. I heard there were lines, but hopefully there's plenty of spaces. There's also three-year-old half-day classes, and they're very excited because at Parley's they added their second four-year-old full-day class. So that's exciting, but it is a cost, and we fund about half of it.
Okay, so is it open to everyone?
It is. It is open to everyone. Anyone can go, and it's on a first-come, first-serve. If your child was in the three-year-old, they do have priority to be in the four-year-old. So those classes do fill pretty fast. So if you're thinking about that with your three-year-old, I would highly encourage people to get their three-year-old. And they are just, it's half-day. It could be mornings or afternoons. And they're great programs, and the first batch of kids from preschool, I think, are now in fifth grade, and that was at McPolin was the pilot, and the teachers all the way through, the data is showing the difference it has made.
So how much does the Ed Foundation then provide towards this?
Over $100,000 a year. And that is all comes from donors, mostly our general fund. Vail's Epic Promise also gives a very large gift to that. They see the importance both for their own employees. That is a huge issue for Vail and all employees in town is affordable child care and preschool. So they've been giving to that since they came to town in 2012, we're grateful for.
What do they kick in, do you know?
They kick in $15,000 to $20,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, are those kids who don't go to preschool, are they going to fall behind? I mean, if they stay home with their parents, parents tend to, teach letters and numbers.
They do. So I would say for the most part, parents are sending their kids to preschool in Park City. And even in most of the state, there's a lot of, I know when my kids were little, I sent them to a little in-home preschool. That was like the biggest choice. I think there was maybe one other one in town. There are more now. There are very few kids who don't go to preschool, and they tend to be from our ESL or low-income population, and so that puts them even further behind. So there definitely is outreach to these families, and there are outreach aides at each school that help get these families registered.
Okay. Also wanted to mention, of course, it's the 10th anniversary Running with Ed. We've got early bird registration.
Yes.
Open for that. What is it, just a better deal?
Yes, it's $10 off a person, so it's $85, and it'll go up to $95 on March 1st. And there also is if your team captain registered, which a lot did, you still have to get yourself registered to get that early price. So just because your team got registered as the team captain, everybody needs to get done. And so we're encouraging people to do that before the break, because everyone will go on break for a week after this week and kind of forget. And then if you didn't, come back and get your team registered. Tons of fun stuff for the 10th anniversary. We have limited edition t-shirts, medals, race bibs. We're giving sunglasses this year, but those are limited supplies. So that is also first come, first serve. And there'll be a bunch of fun memories on social media coming up in the next 2 months. And this is one of the things that raises money for things like preschool.
Yeah. How much does it raise, Running With Ed?
$250,000. So it's a big chunk for us. That and the Red Apple Gala are our two biggest fundraisers. And the nice thing about Running With Ed, though, is that everyone can take part. So the gala is very limited. There's only 280 seats. Anyone can take part in Running With Ed. There's the leg between Jeremy Ranch and Ecker that's, you know, about 1.5 miles that almost anybody can do. Or, you know, help your school with their exchange. The schools put on great exchanges. You can give to a fundraising team. Those are already getting set up. So it's a great community event. And we just finished a big survey with parents and teachers. And one of the things that came back from the survey is the teachers love how it brings the community and the teachers together. They really get to see each other out there in their costumes. And so it's a great way to support education in our town.
And the date of Running With Ed is?
It is May 18th, third Saturday in May. But again, get registered by the end of February.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Jen?
Not at this point in time. Just thank you to everyone who supports the Ed Foundation and our students and teachers.
Okay. It's Jen Billow, the Associate Director with the Park City Education Foundation.